Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
The Burt Show.
Of course you know Colby Calais. Still dig listening to your own music?
Totally.
Is it a charge? Like when you're cruising around in your car and you hear you on the radio, is it as exciting now as it was, you know, back in the day, two years ago?
Yeah. I mean, when Fallen For You first came on the radio and I was back home in Cali and driving down the road and it came on, I was like, oh my God, I started screaming. It's still exciting.
It is? Awesome.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, you are one of the first artists that just started kicking ass on MySpace, right? And then all of a sudden, like, the music industry had to sort of take notice. We're talking like 10 million hits, right?
Something like that, yeah.
So how does that work? They call you up and they're like, hey, everybody else loves you. We just don't know about you yet.
Well, after I became the number one unsigned artist on MySpace, I had got a manager like a month before that. And so once that happened, all of the record labels started calling him. And then we went to New York and had meetings with all of them. And yeah.
So you got to pick your record label.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It is awesome.
Definitely. I went with my gut feeling on who I felt comfortable with the most.
So is it a little bit like, are they all pitching you at the same time? Is it almost like a hot high school senior where the colleges are coming by and they're making their recruiting pitches?
Kind of. It's something like that, yeah. And when I went with Universal because they promised me my artist freedom and creativity, and they are all really good people. Like, I'm friends with them, so...
And when they say like freedom and creativity, you basically just get to be able to do whatever you want without a whole bunch of people looking over your shoulder.
Yeah, and obviously, like, we all compromise and they bring up ideas that I never would have thought of before, and you know, we work together. But I mean, I had all my songs up on MySpace and the fans liked them as they were, so they weren't going to go make me re-record the record or do anything like that.
At what point, how many hits or how many plays do you have to have on MySpace before you get the first call from the music industry saying, there's something going on here. Who are you?
I was getting 50,000 plays a day, and that was being the number one unsigned artist. And that's when I got the call.
Yeah. That is amazing.
That's incredible.
That's awesome.
How quickly did it take to grow to that point? Like, was there one day when you woke up and said, whoa, I'm at 50,000 all of a sudden? Or was it like every single day you're like...
It kept growing every single week. I mean, it went to 300 and then it went to like 1500 and then it went to 15,000 or like it went to 10,000. It kept going up like 5,000 a week or sometimes more. But yeah, after about 6 to 8 months, it grew.
And it's so pure too. I mean, you didn't have to do anything. You didn't have to release a balloon that wasn't that. I mean, it was just sort of a pure kind of organic word of mouth thing, which makes it so awesome.
Exactly. Everyone just kept spreading my songs to their friends, so it's amazing.
And
that's
what Balloon Boy tried to do. He just tried to spread himself
right.
to the state of Colorado.
I'm curious, because so many of your songs are love songs, who is your muse? Or if it's the same person?
Some of the songs are about the same guy, and like Bubbly was written about no guy in particular. I was writing about my dream guy. So yeah, each song is different. And a lot of the songs aren't about me and a boyfriend. They're about friends or family members and just writing about relationships in general.
Will you call those people before the song comes out and say, look, I just want to let you know that I've got a song coming out. And yeah, it is about you. And here's what I meant.
Yeah, well, everyone knows what songs are about them. Like, my best friend knows what song's about her. My parents know about them. My ex-boyfriend knows the ones that are about him. So, yeah, I don't get embarrassed by it for some reason.
Is the songwriting part of this whole thing easier for you than the performing, or the other way around?
Yeah, songwriting's definitely easier. But you know what? Performing, that's why I named my new album Breakthroughs, because I broke through my fear of performing, and I actually enjoy it now. It took me a couple years to eventually... get over it, but the more I grew, the more I learned about how fun performing can be.
Like, what kind of fear are we talking about? Like, debilitating, like I can't be in front of people type stuff?
Like, crying before I'd go out on stage.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah, it was bad, and I had to make myself go out there, and I still continued to go on tour and do TV performances, even though I dreaded it, and now it's gotten so much easier, and like, I look forward to my show tonight. Like, everything, I just have fun with now.
Awesome. Was there ever a point where, like, you couldn't do it? You were there ready to perform and the fear came over you so much that you backed out and you ran out the door?
No. I mean, I was crying, and like, I think we made the show, I started like 20 minutes late or something, but I got talked in, like, you know, everyone like calms you down, and I went out there. The only time is like TV performances where I really, like, I kind of mess up when I get nervous sometimes. So those are the ones that show.
Is this are you confident in your talent?
Yeah, I don't know what it is. It's really strange. It's I still haven't figured out what it is that makes me nervous.
I think you just automatically assume when you've, at least from the outside looking in, when you're so successful already, that you've got this confidence to you that this is easy. I got this.
Right.
Yeah.
There's not, I mean, but there's other singers that have had this. And the only one that comes to mind is Rod Stewart, used to hide behind the speakers.
Really?
And sing from behind the speakers before he got to the point where he could be out on stage.
Really?
In front of the crowd. Yeah. So there's plenty of stories like
see,
that.
See, I just started out writing songs and recording in the studio, and I never was performing. So all of a sudden, when I got the record deal and I went on tour with the Goo Goo Dolls, it was like, okay, you're going to perform in front of 10,000 people now. And that was like, I had to learn as I got in this business. So that was a tough part. You know how I've had stage fright, and I've been shy whenever I get in front of the camera. And everyone that I work with, they reminded me that I can be silly and quirky, and I don't care what people think when I'm just by myself with friends and family. Mm-hmm. And they wanted me to show that side in my music video. And I also wanted to show the side of love, where you can fall in love with a person for everything about them, their personality, how they make you feel, how they make you laugh. And that's what the love interest in the video, Bobby Moynihan, shows.
Right on. I read yesterday, and you never know if it's true or what, you know, when you read on the internet. Did you have writer's block so badly on the new CD that you had to like take off for Hawaii and you got a couple of writers with you and you just hunkered down and got it done?
Yeah. I mean, I was writing when I was on tour, but I came home after a year and a half of touring, and I've always been going to Hawaii since I was younger, and I wanted to go and take a month off and right before I record the record, soak up everything about real life and bring my friends that I write songs with me and write about everything that we're going through and that I'm feeling like writing about.
Or one of those friends, one of the judges on American Idol.
Cara DioGuardi.
Yeah, she went with you.
Yeah.
I knew it wasn't Simon. You don't want to be held up with him for a couple of weeks in Hawaii. Hey, Mandy, good morning. You're on Q100.
Good morning. I just wanted to tell her what a beautiful voice she has. You know, so many artists, when you hear them acoustically, they don't sound nearly as good as they do on the radio. And I actually think she sounds better. You have a fabulous voice.
Thank you so much. That's very sweet.
It's awesome. Well, you can hear it tonight at Variety Playhouse also. So have a great time in town tonight.
Thank you.
And I appreciate you coming by. I know it's so hard to get up and do this. Mm. We know, especially today, how hard it is.
I know. We're all feeling it.
Especially after that Falcons game.
How'd you enjoy the game last night?
It was really fun.
Did you have a good time?
I've never been to a game before. So
your first football game?
Yeah, first football game.
Wow.
Cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. It's Colby Calais in studio.
The Burt Show.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
The Burt Show.
This is one of my favorite segments that we do on The Burt Show right here.
It just gets real, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you just kind of set aside all sensitivities, or nobody's going to get all upset or offended or defensive. Just going to ask questions to each other.
We call this Ask a Race. So if you're white and you've always wanted to ask a black person something, but you were too scared, too nervous, you didn't want to offend or whatever, go ahead and ask it today. Carl's in here. Kenny Burns is in here. And if you're black, you've got a whole bunch of goofy-ass questions to ask white people, because I see them. They're great. Things I never even thought of before.
What about the interracial racial?
Yeah, we're just listening to Kenny here and Carl talk about the whole interracial racial problem going on.
Yeah, because like I said, my mom's half white, so I'm a quarter, and I'm light skinned. And then, you know, Carl over here is my brother from another mother.
He's dark skinned.
So back in the day, the dark skinned brothers used to hate on the light skinned brothers because Al B. Shore and all those prolific R&B artists, Heavy D and the Boys. No, it used to be like, yeah, we used to get all the girls, and it used to be a thing, right?
Then next thing you know,
Came Wesley Snipes.
Yeah.
Put us dark-skinned brothers deep in the game.
New Wesley Snipes. New Jack City.
Michael Jordan.
Yeah. Michael Jordan.
Michael Jordan did it for the ball
head. Yeah. But no, it's real, and it was interracial.
Right.
It was racially interracial. Racial.
So, racial. And my question was this. Well, does that mean, would dark-skinned black women go for light-skinned black dudes?
I think back then, all women,
light-skinned guys. Yeah. I wouldn't even go out with Kenny back in the day.
He wouldn't.
You know, why? I mean, if I went out with him, I just know that all the girls gonna be at him. It was, just, I mean, seriously, it was just like that. I wouldn't hate him or anything like that.
Jealous.
But hands down, man,
like this,
this guy. Then he wouldn't go out with me in the '90s.
Now, do you think that for black women, it's this, there's tension between dark skinned black girls and light skinned?
Have you ever seen School
Definitely.
Days?
Yeah,
they had the Jigaboos and right. the what was the other name for the other crew? But no, they definitely had right.
School Days by Spike Lee.
Yeah, no, they had a real the light skinned girls were thought to have pretty wavy hair, and the dark skinned girls had the nappy whatever. So it was a thing, and it was a thing. You know, we went to black college,
right?
So,
right.
You know, I went to Morris Brown, he went to Clark. So it was kind of like we came in on the tail end of it,
right.
kind of. But
and you guys knew each other back in the day.
It was real. We knew of each other.
Yeah. I was the party guy.
Yeah, he was
the
party guy.
What was Carl?
I was the cool guy.
Yeah, he was the cool guy.
All right, white people. Why do white people let their dogs kiss their face?
Disgusting. Justin Anthony knows.
We should
get Justin Anthony on the phone. Look, we were leaving. I don't know where, the W or something one night, and we went to McDonald's, and he had these fries. First of all, I never seen so much salt in my front seat the next morning. But then he picks his dog up to take him to his house, and he's just. I'm driving, and I almost crashed because the dog is in the mouth, like all up in with the tongue, and I'm like, Justin, he's gonna touch it. He touched your tongue.
And just like Kenny's going on, man, it really like just disgusts us hands down.
Yeah.
And what I want to know is, do they ever think about the disease or the germs? Like, does that even cross the mind?
Well, I can say mine's very specific. I have an English bulldog, and it's too fat to have its tongue in its butt or it's on its genitals. So if it kisses my face, I'm okay with it because I.
But you are aware of what your dog does the minute it sees another dog, right?
Yeah, but I mean, he's the only dog in the house.
Oh my! It is
so he has licked my face.
Even the drool, like, do you see the pieces and the particles in the drool? Sometimes it is. I mean, leftover dog food, strains of grass. It's just a nasty situation.
I think it's like a reflection of how we treat animals, right? I mean, Carl, because we've talked about this, like when all the like dog fighting stuff came up or whatever, and it's not. Like, animals in, like, our house are like little humans. Like, we treat them like little humans, and that's why they're misbehaved and spoiled, rotten, and all that other stuff. But, like, to you, like, a dog is an outside animal.
Yeah, he's
like,
a dog.
It's totally fine if the dog stays outside. And we buy, like, $400 beds for our dogs and stuff like that. Like, I think it's just a reflection of that.
Yeah, no, dogs got to stay outside.
You ever seen a dog in, like, a sweater?
I've seen it all.
That's not a white owner.
I've seen men with dogs in bags on planes. Who does that? I don't know. Like, the carry-ons.
This is a big-time cultural difference, though.
Oh, no.
The way white people
I won't
black
buy
people.
My kids a dog.
Why?
Why not?
Because I don't want them in my house.
What's wrong?
I just don't like the smell. It gets to be a smell. And people always talk about there's no smell. My dog don't smell. Smell your dog. Smell your dog. It's a smelly situation. I'm serious. Call me bougie. Call me light-skinned Carl. Whatever you want to call me.
So you're a cat man.
I am a no animal man.
No animals at all.
You get like three cats. And you don't need a dog.
I don't do it. I had a cat named Bootsy that was always in heat. And it turned me off when I was a child. And I had a dog named Garfield who ran away, and it was over.
You're scarred. Still scarred.
I know a lot of guys like him. I know a lot of black folks like Kenny. Don't touch animals at all.
Really?
No, I touch dogs. I mean, like, I'm not like an animal hater. I love to play with dogs. I just don't want them in my house.
Send them back home.
Many people think that black people are afraid of dogs.
Negative. We are the pit bull kings.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Doberman pinchers.
Crucial.
Ashton.
Yes.
Hi, go ahead. You're
Can
on.
I say that? Pit bull kings.
I have a question regarding how do y'all accept the term of President Obama being titled the first African-American president when his mother is clearly not African-American?
Who are you asking this to?
The black people.
The black people?
Yeah.
Okay.
Actually, good question. But he is black because that's considered the dominant race color-wise. I'm sorry, dominant color. Is that, do you think that's it, Carl?
Yeah, and for the most part, if
I didn't mean to say Donald Erase. I don't want to start
five other black people in the room, and Obama was in the room, Kenny was in the room. Somebody came in and said, "Oh, black people hit the floor." He'd be one of them to hit the floor too. So I consider him to be black.
Now, so, well, that's yes,
the, that's the litmus test. Right there.
Yes, but now
that was views of yes. Carl. That was Carl's view on the situation.
Yeah. Okay, that's the bottom line. Right?
But I
because
will say
that's a good point because I'd be like, "Yeah, y'all better get down."
Yeah. No, I will say as a white woman, I don't think we can have it both ways because I don't think white people can judge someone of mixed race and always call them black, which I think traditionally happens. And then when Obama's in office because mm-hmm. he has a white mom, then try to say, well, he's got a white mom. Oh. That's inconsistent. Oh. That's inconsistent.
But he associated himself with being black.
You yeah, never, you never, a mixed race person, I've never heard of anybody call them white.
What we should have asked that girl is if you were driving down a street you'd never been down before and he approached your car, would you lock your doors?
Crucial.
And when she said, yep, then, well, there you go. That's why it happened.
Which was a question, actually, that we had going here. Hey, Andrea, good morning. You're on
Q100. Good morning. Yeah, I'm mixed. So my question was,
hey.
I'm mixed with Mexican, Indian, Black. And I've noticed when I was in high school a lot, we'd go to, you know, underground in Atlanta. And my white friend, she would always lock the door and a black person would cross the street. So later on that evening, we were going to go back to where we lived at, and I was like, oh my God, there's some white people. Lock the door, lock the door. And so then she started laughing. She was like, why do you do that? And I said, because you did it to me earlier. But I just didn't know, why do white people always lock the door when they see black people hanging around on the corner or going on MLK or, you know, I was just curious why they do that.
You saw a white person on MLK?
Yeah, seriously, yeah.
No, you know what though? That's I mean, I just think that there are some scary looking black people, just like there's some scary looking white people. Yeah. So I mean, you know, yeah. I get nervous myself sometimes. Oh, crucial! We want to go this way. No, I mean, but I think it depends on the person.
I think it's where you are too. There are mm-hmm. scary places where a whole bunch of white people hang out,
right.
And there are scary places where black people hang out. So have you ever anybody in here locked the doors?
I
live downtown. I lock my doors. I mean, that's just regular.
I lock my
every time I get in the car. Yeah, I think I always lock my doors regardless if there's mm-hmm. people around or not.
Right.
I think that's being a girl.
My car locks, you know, when you start it. So it's never
on purpose.
A thought. Yeah. But it's programmed into the GPS. The minute I get to a certain point in the city, bam, lock them all. Puts the windows up. No, but it's I think that is the single rudest racially profile thing that you could do. Mm-hmm. Because
I've seen people walk across the
you
street.
You can hear it. Like, they're electric locks. It's not like the little slider thing that used to have in my dad's Sunbird.
Right.
It's like, thunk!
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And it, like, if so, if somebody's standing near your car and you lock your doors on them, like,
well, I'm sure that
rude.
The mentality must be, well, I'd rather be embarrassed than be safe, quote unquote, you know?
Right. Yeah.
But I've seen white people walk across the street. Like, a white couple walking down the street, two black guys, and they'll walk across the street to stay away from the black dudes.
Oh, yeah. That's happened to me plenty of times.
It has?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
They may know you. It may not have anything to do
with it. Right? Check my history. But I've even had women tug on their purse. Like, they'll, like, switch their purse from the side that I'm on to the other side.
Oh,
and then
really?
They'll tug on it.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. I mean, you know, I guess it's safer than sorry, but, you know, I'm not going to do anything to
it. Is there anything that black people do around white people? Like, if y'all are driving in a way redneck part of town or way out in the country or something, do you lock your doors?
Nope.
Or?
I mean, I've seen some scary white people.
Or turn up B98.5 real loud and pretend you're...
I have a black friend who she will lock her doors if she's in a predominantly white areas.
Really?
She feels
really?
Like, yeah. She says, because they're going to see me and they're going to know I don't belong and they're going to, you know, she feels like she's going to get harassed in affluent white neighborhoods.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I think my attitude used to be, I wish a mother sucker would, like, I mean who cares, like,
you want to fight?
No, it's not a want to fight, but like, what do you have to be scared of? People are people, like, unless somebody's running up to you swinging or pulling an object out, like,
mm-hmm.
what do you have to be scared of?
Right.
But see, I mean, that's a guy mentality, because a woman, it's like Jen said, I lock my doors all the time. It doesn't matter if I'm in a black neighborhood, a white neighborhood, it don't matter, because a lot more can happen to a girl.
And I won't walk down the street alone if there's a white guy or a black guy and I'm by myself. Like, it doesn't matter to me. It's just that it's a guy.
Right.
Hey, Rob, good morning. You're on Q100.
How you doing, guys? I got a couple questions. I want to ask the one because I don't know how to ask the other one. But the first one is, I work with a bunch of black people, and why they all eat their steaks well done? Every one of them.
You know what I was going to ask? Why do white people eat their steaks rare?
No, I was going to ask the same question. No, I can't, because it's the blood.
Exactly.
It's the visual of red blood oozing in your meat.
we've talked about it before, that we're more conscientious about bacteria and about disease and germs and things like that.
Bro.
That's the only reason why I don't ever eat a rare steak.
Why is that a cultural thing, though?
I don't know. Why is that? And what came up the last time we did this that made us really realize that?
Drinking after each other or something like
something
that.
It was something about your, Carl, something with the forks you use or something, wiping something down
or something.
Right,
right. I don't never use a fork.
Utensil, right?
Yeah, when I'm in a restaurant, the fork that I get, I'll dip it in my water. And
right.
I'll wipe it off.
That was it.
Even before you put it in your mouth, you'll always like clean it and rinse it first.
He's just a hypochondriac. Definitely. My wife is like that.
Yeah? White people don't do that, though, generally.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, that's the person. I don't know if that's necessary.
But I think that's...
The red meat thing is definitely, I can agree with that.
That's upbringing, too, because, like, I always ordered my steak what my dad got. He always got his, I think, medium well up until... You know, I was old enough to try one that was medium, and now that's how I like them. And
right.
I would guess my kid would do the same thing. You know what I mean? So if you grew up eating it cooked that way,
is it better tasting though?
No, it's definitely. You know what? I tried.
I think
it.
So.
I tried it, Carl. Yeah. It's definitely a little less. It's easier to eat.
Yeah,
really?
It's not like leathery.
It's not chewy. Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, Rob, I'm really curious what your other question was that you thought you were going to struggle through.
I'm dying to know this one because all the guys at work are like, oh, hell no. And why don't black men like to perform, like, oral on women?
Yeah, those are strange guys right there. I don't know. Okay, I don't know.
Good.
Yeah, that might have been a 90s thing.
I don't get the question.
What was going on in
go
the
down.
90s?
Black men don't go down.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, I think that's a 90s thing. How old are these gentlemen that
you
work
young.
With?
He hung up.
Oh, crucial.
Well, yeah, you got to be like younger
guys. I don't know any guys that don't. I mean, that are grown, that don't like.
Where does a stereotype like that come from? Because when this comes up in our group, and I ask the black guy,
we had that discussion between black guys and white guys.
No, it's true. It's true. That used to be the mentality. I think now more and more. I mean, but I think that comes with maturity too, though. Like you're not 14 years old, even if it's your first time, 15, whatever, you know what I mean? Your first time is, you're not thinking about going down. But then, you know, when you get older, it's a part of the process.
But you know what, though? I think that, especially as a younger guy, as a younger boy and everything, I think your manhood is based on, you know, your sex, what you can do sexually.
Yeah,
and I think that black guys, man, we just kind of stood real proud on how we could perform sexually without anything else in the bed, you know? So I think that going down would kind of
take
away from that, exactly.
I don't need none of the nonsense. I just got this. That's it.
Uh-huh.
Hmm. Well,
no bells and whistles.
You didn't ask the women.
Yeah.
When you get older, you learn, oh, honey, what do you want? Oh,
it's not
okay.
Going down,
See, Carl, that goes back to the light-skinned dark skin thing. See, I was light-skinned. I was a Prince fan. You know, I saw Purple Rain. I saw Purple Rain at 13, and I studied certain situations of the situation, and by 16, I was all good.
He was a fan.
Hey, Danielle, good morning. You're on the Burt Show, Q100.
Hey,
how you doing, Estelle?
I'm good. I was just wanting to know, when it's cold, why do white people come out with a jacket and shorts on?
I saw a little boy at the bus stop this morning, 50 degrees with shorts on.
It flipped off.
And a short sleeve shirt, and the guy next to him had a winter coat.
Well, she's saying he has a jacket on, right? But shorts on?
Yeah, a jacket and shorts, and I've seen grown men do it, and they'll have like mandals on. I'm like, are you serious?
Mandals.
You know what? I almost did it, and this is going to be no defense of your situation, but I think this is a total white person thing to do. I had Jessica's car yesterday. It's a convertible. It was 50 degrees out, but I was tempted to put the top down and be that guy wearing the jacket with the heat on, but that's all right. The sun was shining. I put the convertible top down. I think
that's one of those things we can't explain, but we certainly acknowledge that white people do that.
It's holding on to summer as long as you can.
Intern Rich, you can explain this?
I think I might have a...
Grab a mic.
I might have a reason for it, but basically it's, you know, even growing up, we're always kind of taught that paradise is, you know, the beach, the warm weather, and that's kind of like where your family goes on vacation. And I think a lot of times we're just in denial that winter is coming, and we want to prolong the sandals and the shorts as long as possible because that's what we're kind of grow up as knowing as beach, you know, break time, fun, good weather. So we kind of hold on, I think.
It could be.
I think.
I'm guilty. Hey, Angie, good morning. You're on Q100.
Hey, good morning.
Hi.
My question is, when you ride down the street, you see a white person driving, the passenger always sticks their feet out the window, and it's always a barefoot. It's never
that's a Florida
foot
thing.
Shoe and a sock on.
That's a Florida just, thing.
Even if your feet are dirty, too. Yeah, that's
it. It's always dirty.
Yeah, foot
see, it gets back to the dirty thing for you again.
Yeah, it's nasty.
That is trashy. I think that's disgusting.
But you've never seen a black person do it, but certainly white people do it all the time.
I have a question. It's specifically for Kenny, but it's related to black people.
Crucial.
Percentage-wise, when I hear a party advertised on V103,
yeah,
of all the invited guests, how many actually show up?
You know what? When it comes to Alex, I will say he's 100% because he, you know, pays his...
In general, though.
But every now and again, you hear, you know...
We're going to start doing the same thing.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, the Q100, Big Wicked, yeah. Barack Obama, Pope right. Benedict, Tupac coming back,
right.
Bill Cosby.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I mean, you know, it's a tragedy they would even let them promote something that wasn't true. I mean, you know.
Well, they're getting around it because you say invited guests. So, like, who can we invite to Big Wicked?
Oh, we'll invite Usher.
A-Rod.
Yeah, A-Rod. Madonna. Sure. Michael Jordan's invited.
Cruise. Yes.
I'm coming.
Kelly, go ahead.
Okay, when driving on the highway, this is for black people, in the left lane, I would like to know why you guys drive slow and do not move over.
In the speed lane?
Do black people think that they drive slowly? More slowly than white people?
I don't know any black person that drives slow.
That drives slow at all.
Yeah, if I'm in the left lane, I'm 100.
Real easy.
Q100.
Okay, because I have an hour drive to work every day, and I started creating my own statistics.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Okay, what do you got?
That's funny.
Well, you're like, cute. 50% of the time, it's people, black people, that don't move over, and they know I might be going 10 over the speed limit, and they know I'm, like, right behind them, and they won't move over. And then, like, 20% of the time, it's Asians. And
I was about to say, you sure it's not
Spanish
Asians?
People.
Like, I don't know. I've seen Asians do it. I've witnessed that. I've never seen a black person do
it.
Oh,
yeah. Like, you can tell them for... ever, and they won't move over.
Well,
do you think, in your own head, do you think that they are blocking you because you're white and they're black?
I mean, I don't know. That's why I'm calling.
No, it's not that. They can't drive. It's the same person probably every day.
You get behind the same person 50% of the time.
Yeah, cut that out. Go another round.
All right, one more question here. Hey, Tiffany, go ahead. You're on Ask a Race Q100.
Hi. I have a question for white women. Sometimes they'll ask, or when I first meet them, they'll talk to me like, hey, girlfriend, hey, sister, or something like that. And I don't even speak like that, so it's kind of weird to me.
Mm-hmm. So they're trying to be hipper than they are.
Yeah, probably just trying to fit in.
Or trying to make you, I think it's more of just an olive branch. Like, I want you to know that, you know, I'm not a racist white person, even though they're coming across as racist by trying to say, you know, slang. But I do think that a lot of times white women mistake it. Like, I just want to let you know that I'm cool.
Right. I usually just ask when I meet a black person, say, would you like to do this in English or Ebonics? And I'll just
That's racial. That's so racial.
It's funny. You rarely see black people try to white their language. But you see white people trying to black their language.
Oh,
all
I disagree.
I disagree too. And I disagree because, you know, it's a thing. It's like I'm from Washington, D.C. I might not sound like I'm from D.C. when I'm in Atlanta, but if I go home, I'm saying, you know, the youngin' and the slang. But, you know, even when we're out, Bert, like I'm not, I mean, yes, right. I do. But, you know, sometimes, I mean, or let's say corporate experiences. When I'm doing a pitch for Heineken, you know, I'm not in a Heineken meeting unless it's, you know, I'm comfortable with them, you know, being totally, you know, myself. Mm-hmm. You have to present what they want. And then after you find out what they really want, you can be you.
Then you can be yourself.
And I don't think that you all have really heard the real me, though. Not around here. Because I don't think that you all really understand.
Yeah, he's ghetto.
What's the real
you? Did.
Yeah, because there were a couple times where I would, when Carl and I went to BET last year, and so we're walking in and together, and he's like, look over there, it's Jazzy Faye. You know, that's what he's saying to me, and I'm like, oh, cool. And he's like, and look, you know, there's T-Pain over there. And then he would see, you know, for other friends, black friends of his, and it was a completely different person. I think I even called you out on it once. I'm like, you're whiting it down for me. But I think
I'm just pronouncing my ask.
Ask.
And why does it have to be whiting it down? Why can't it be whiting it up?
Boy. But, you know, that happens a lot in the workplace, too. A lot of black folks that I know, they always whiten it up.
Yeah. So stop whiting it up. Cut that out.
Kenny, thanks for coming in, dude.
Thank you, bro.
Appreciate it.
Hey, can I ask you a quick question? My
can you what?
Quick question.
Can
my
you
wife,
what?
Michelle, she wanted me to ask y'all this.
Ask
us? To what?
Every
ask,
time.
She wants us to do what?
She wanted me to holler at y'all about something. She wanted me to ask you all, man, the movie that black people see, that every time I tell her that I've never seen The Color Purple, her friends just hit the floor like in disbelief. What's that white movie, man, that every white person has seen just to get you that white card?
It's like either Top Gun.
E.T.
Oh, my. She said Top Gun.
Pretty Woman.
Really? Oh, that's my favorite movie in the history of the world.
Is there a universal white movie? Say anything?
I think it's generational. I would go with Fast Times at Ridgemont High for one generation.
I haven't seen that.
I think Bert's favorite movie is Good Hair. That he walked out.
Now that I understand it, it is.
Oh my God, Bert walked out. Everyone, he just got so uncomfortable. He was laughing.
No, I did not.
Yes, you did.
I walked
Bert.
Out because it was 10 o'clock and I had to be up in 3 hours.
Ah, okay. There
I was fascinated by that movie.
That was hilarious.
It was great.
It was hilarious.
All right, Kenny, thanks for coming in, man.
No doubt, Daddy.
What happened to Karen?
I don't know. She was on hold and then. She disappeared. I know she was waiting on an interview with Dr. Oz.
Oh, yeah,
so maybe he called in earlier or something like that, and she put Oz above us. Whatever.
We'll do this again. You have to come back.
I love it.
The Bert Show.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boost and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
The Bert Show.
We call this Ask a Race. And sometimes they're light questions. Other times it gets real serious in here, you know? But I have always said that you got to be tolerant of ignorant questions, because the only way to get around it is to listen to the ignorant questions, be patient, and then go ahead and answer them.
Crucial.
So we got Kenny Burns in here this morning. What's going on, Kenny?
What's up, big brother?
How you doing, dude?
I'm chilling.
What were you guys doing yesterday? Kenny came in here and said that you were working with Jenna.
Oh, yeah. Jenna was getting her sexy on for the for the 944 magazine. Atlanta Hot List?
Something like that.
You're on the hot list, Jen.
And so is Kenny Burns.
Crew show.
So what was it for?
It was for
it's a new magazine launching in town.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. It's the inaugural issue. Awesome. They actually bought 6 Degrees. So there's no more 6 Degrees. It will be 944 magazine. It'll be big. They want to take the place of Peach.
Okay. Yeah. I got you. Well, now. Yeah. There was a time where nobody could start a magazine here because there were too many, and now it's wide open.
Yeah. It's a big market.
Wide open. Market. Carl's going to help us out here also. You want to grab a mic, Carl? So can you understand what goes on here?
Yeah.
I mean, it's anything.
We were talking about it at 10 degrees. I'm so ready.
So white people are going to call, and they'll ask questions that they've always wanted to ask but always been embarrassed to. Carl's handled it pretty well in the past. You'll get it today with him. Right. And Karen Greer was supposed to join us also.
Where'd you go?
I don't know. She's not on the phone, man.
By the way, Jen has pretty feet. She's walking around barefoot.
Do we want to get into that?
Absolutely. The prettiest feet. Just wanted to mention that.
You're funny.
We'll start off with the most basic of questions, okay? These were ones that were either emailed over the last couple of months that we never got to. As a white person, how do I refer to people of color? Is it black or do I say African American?
That's a good question, actually.
That's not bad. Well, I'm from Washington, D.C. personally, but let me see. I mean, I'm black. Yeah. Black guy. When we talk, we say black
man,
guy,
mm-hmm.
white guy, Spanish guy.
Right.
Mexican. Yeah.
Black.
All day long.
So African American, that just seems.
You're just walking on eggshells.
Yeah, I think that's the politically correct version of the word black.
Black. Okay.
Now, this is, because I want to make sure we're representing this right. Also, people can call up and ask white people questions, right? Yeah. Other races can ask white people questions.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right, let's go with Michelle. Good morning. You're on
Q100. Hi, guys.
Good morning.
Hi.
I'm just trying to find out why black people like to walk in the middle of the road, and then when you kind of like wait, they go painfully slow to get out of the road, and then mean mug you when you drive by in your car.
Mean mug.
All right. Why do black people walk in the middle of the road?
I think that's all people, really, depending on the time and place. I mean, I live in Alpharetta.
I'm with her. I don't think it's all people.
Are you serious?
I'm with her. I would ask the same question.
And they slow down?
Yes. It sure seems to me that, yeah.
Like, does that mean like jaywalking?
No,
like they're not using crosswalks? I don't understand what that means.
They're in the middle of the road, even if there's sidewalks on either side. Like, It just happened to me again the other day, and I'm like, get out of the road.
It feels like to me like black people will walk in the middle of the road, and they'll time it just right so you won't hit them in the car for sure. But they get close enough to where when the car passes, then they'll walk across the street.
I really do think that the only people that you see, especially on a crosswalk, they're going to hop, hop, hop to get on the sidewalk are white people.
Right. Hurry up.
We're the only ones that actually use the crosswalk.
Rush? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm in the right. You know.
I don't know. I guess I don't know. I've seen it. I can't answer that one. Maybe you can be.
I'm thinking maybe swagger. I don't know. You know,
swag don't have nothing. Maybe I don't know.
I've never seen it though. I mean,
I've
never seen it.
The only time I see black folks, anybody walking in the road when there's no sidewalk, so I can't answer that one.
Yeah. Okay, I have seen it too for sure.
That's happened to Bert.
It has.
Yeah, I see.
Hey, Ramon. Good morning. You're on Q100.
Hey, what's up, Bert?
What's going on?
Hey, love the show. This question is for you guys. For you, Bert. The question is, do white people ever ask like their parents, grandparents, or older family members if they ever participated in the brutal treatment of black people in the past?
Good question.
Whoa. Wow. We're going to get deep here.
Great question.
Yes.
Wow.
So do white people ever ask their parents or grandparents if they ever participate? You have.
I have.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely. I have. And my family let me know, you know what? It was more of an issue where our particular family didn't because we were not rich enough to own slaves, but didn't mean that if we had been rich enough to own slaves, you know, that would have been part of the culture. So, but yes, I did absolutely ask my family that.
Wendy? Wow.
I have not, but now I'm curious and I want to know now.
Chad?
I only have one grandparent left and I've talked to her about it, but she's British. She grew up in England.
Okay.
And came here when she was like a teenager, I think. No, maybe as a girl, and grew up in North Carolina, but that was past that time. So I don't really know from my dad's side because they're no longer living.
Jeff?
I've never even thought to ask.
Yeah, I think 75% of white people would probably say that they never even thought to ask their grandparents.
You all should ask.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I'm curious.
And that's funny because with black folks, you don't even have to ask. They're going to offer that information regardless as you come up.
Mm-hmm. What is that like as a black person? What is that like to hear that white people aren't asking their grandparents?
Well, I think it's generational. I mean, you know, I'm sure our parents or your parents would probably, you know, it was probably more talked about. It's not talked about as much. So I guess it's, you know, and as we get, you know, as our kids grow up, it'll be more, you know, obviously it's history, but it gets less and less relevant.
Is it a good thing or a bad thing that's not talked about so much?
I mean, I think, you know, you can't hold, I mean, obviously you have to remember and reflect, and it's important to know your history, but I mean, to hold on to, you know, all the negativity that spawned out of that time is, to me, you know.
I think it's a bad thing. I think it's a good thing that you all don't think enough about it to ask, because it kind of shows, I guess, a piece of innocence about what you all have been through. But I think it's bad that you all don't ask and that it's not offered.
All right, Carl, that is going to bring us to our next question.
Know your history.
Kristen, good morning. Kristen, good morning. You're on Q100.
Hi there. Love you guys.
Thank you.
Love you too.
I'm wondering why black people typically mispronounce two words that I notice that are more common are ask and birthday.
Ask and birthday.
Yo, Bert, we just had this conversation.
about ask.
Really?
And Carl, you
had this conversation.
We did.
And Carl just did it, and I noticed it because it was on the screen.
Uh-huh. Now, the last time this came up, Carl was on the radio with us, and he said he didn't even realize that that was even an issue.
I didn't
and you
realize
just
it.
You don't even realize just now you said ax and not ask.
I said ask.
You said
ax.
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 But you put the K before the S, so it's ax.
Ax.
Is that right?
Yes. but you notice
it's so irrelevant, though. Like, I'm sure that's everybody funny. Mispronounces something or says something wrong. I think, personally. I know I screw words up all the time.
And you say what your parents say, right? So, like, if your parents screw it up, then you screw it up, and then you know, like, it just becomes a thing.
I think it's just goofy
stuff that my parents
say. We sure had this conversation at 10 degrees.
We did.
What was the other word? She said two?
I think
birthday.
She said they.
Birthday.
Oh, birth. I don't say birthday. I just think that you're just being lazy.
Birthday, bathroom.
B-I-R-F-D-A-Y. Birthday?
I don't never say that.
I don't either.
I have a new question. I want to know about if you think that white families or black families are harder on interracial relationships.
I think white families are. Because I know a lot of black guys that date white women, and they seem to have issues when it comes to serious time. And serious time is when it's time to go into, and we all know the same people, Bert. But it's, you know, it gets weird when you got to kind of, you know, get serious. Like, I'm going to marry this person. Because, I mean, you know, I don't like ignorance. I think it's retarded. But at the end of the day, some people just don't get it.
I've told this story a million times on the air before, Kenny. Probably the first time you've heard it. Before I met Stacy, I dated a girl from Guyana. And my mom always raised me to be very liberal thinking. We're all equal. Everything's cool, right? So I start dating this girl from Guyana, and I bring her up to New York to meet my mom. And my mom separates me from Chandra that weekend and says, I just want you to really think about what you're doing here. Because if you end up marrying her and have kids, you're going to change our race forever.
Crucial. Well, wow. my mom is half white and told me never to date a white woman.
Why? Really? Why?
Half white. Because she grew up in the 70s, and, you know, she loved her black side, I guess. She told me that.
So is it a fear? Like, in my mom's case, it sure sounded like you're going to make our race less white.
It wasn't.
So is it in black world, is it you're watering down our race?
I mean, she was a mulatto, too, so I don't think it was that, more so than, you know, the 70s and the period she grew up in, the late 60s and 70s. I mean, everything was kind of like, you know, she's from Washington, D.C. It was, you know, Mayor and Barry was coming in. It was just like this whole, like, you know, I guess I don't want to say Black Panther thing, but it was kind of serious. I mean, it was, you know, pro-black everything, and all her friends were doing it, so she got caught up in the sauce.
And I think with my family, I think with my family, it's like a trust thing too. It's like that they didn't necessarily trust what a white woman would bring in my life. Like my grandma and everything, she wasn't racist or anything, but she definitely would tell me not to date a white woman. Because
See,
she didn't
I
trust.
Heard that a lot from, like, I have, you know, several friends that have dated black men, and like the mamas don't like it,
and
haven't been as supportive. And like, I just feel like if I said that about like my family, if for some reason like my family had a problem with it, then it would be seen as racist. But it's almost like okay from the other way around.
You know what? Let me stop tiptoeing around this. I think what it was with my my granddad. I think that it's been so many cases when white women have yelled rape or whatever on a black guy.
Really?
I just think that it's just a trust issue when it comes to my grand folks.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it just has the bottom line to do with that.
You don't agree with that, Kenny?
I just think it's people. I mean, ignorant people do ignorant things. I mean, like, you know, I don't think it's a color thing. And I wish, honestly, that my mother never told me that because, you know, I didn't get you know, I'm married 10 years now, but, you know. White women seem pretty nice.
You never dated a white woman before?
Never dated, like, full-on relationship. Hi, this is my, you know what I mean? Like, but, yeah, I mean, you think about it, like, wait a minute, that's kind of, you know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, look at how we hang out, Bert. Like, I mean, like, when we all together, it's like whatever. It's like the guys' club, you know what I mean? We don't break down race. And then we talk about every kind of woman that walks by. Right. She's, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so, we don't discriminate.
Exactly.
But you know what, though? Doesn't it get to a point for you all to get to that point, though? Like, I think
like everything else, maturity plays a part in everything. But the key is that you can't limit. You know, I had a experience this weekend. You know, I live in Alpharetta, so you know my son's plays football. He's the only black boy on the team. Whatever. So you know, all his friends are white. You know, and then like I noticed like how some of the little kids will yell at their fathers. Right, Kenny knows that I will come on the field and embarrass him. You know, at Newtown Park, if he would ever do that. But at the end of the day, you know, I had to, like, pull the other kid. That, you know, it's not my child, but this is the way I was raised. I pulled the child aside. I was like, listen, you going to yell at your father? Like, he's, you know, he's here every weekend with you trying to encourage you to do better. And, like, he kind of looked at me like, you know, and processed it. But at the end of the day, that's what it's all about, communication. You can't sit here and expect, you know, children to know. I mean, they don't know. Like, you have to teach them, so...
You pulled somebody else's child all by yourself and said, more respectful?
Absolutely. And the mothers, when the fathers aren't there, they want me to get on their sons like I get on my child.
I've heard you say this too, Carl.
Yeah, and I was thinking, man, is that a black thing? Because you seem so in question about it, like, well, you would never do that.
Thing.
I would do that any day.
I'll tell you what.
And that's up there. You get North Georgia. They're like, look, if you don't behave, I'm going to send the black man over here to talk to you. And that just sounds scary to them.
Well, if I had to be totally honest, first, I wouldn't do it at all. I just wouldn't do it at all. I think I was going to say, and I'd be less inclined to do it with a black family than I would with a white family. But I don't think that's
the
truth.
But if you had the trust of the, it's like I go to the, you know, all the parents kind of congregate weekly for these events, right? And you know, you get to know these people. So they know the energy that I provide for their kids during the game. I'm the only one running up and down the sideline. Right. And it's not a black thing. I'm just the most energetic one. Because all the fathers follow me. They just don't say as much as I say. So, you know, it's just kind of like, you know, you look at it like that. And then you would be comfortable to say something because at the end of the day, you earn their trust. They understand what you bring to the table for their children, and look what they're gonna say. I'm not over there like you better MF, and I'm over there saying, look, you're tripping. That's your daddy. You know what I mean?
Right.
He could punch you in your chest in front of everybody, and then what? You're right, Uncle Kenny.
Coach Kenny. Here's Tiffany. Hey, Tiffany.
Hey.
Hey.
My question is, why don't white women walk with their shoulders back?
Why don't white women? Is this something
thing.
That most black people think about white women? Have you guys thought of that before?
I don't. I mean, I slump, but I just naturally slump. I didn't realize that a lot of white women slump, but I don't hold my shoulders back.
I think I hold my shoulders back. I think it's a person thing.
I don't think I have great posture.
Why?
But I don't know why.
Because you're white.
Maybe so. I don't know.
Scoliosis? What?
I don't know. White women don't know that they're walking that way if they are.
Is it
you
the
should
boobies?
Start looking.
Really? I have to look around. I know I don't. I know that my mom fussed at me all growing up about that, and I never got into the good habit of sitting up straight. I mean, like I'm slumping now. And
me too.
So yeah. So, but I'll have to look around and see other white women do it.
Do black moms, grandmothers, grandfathers, and stuff, is it much more important to have posture when you're younger?
Yeah, I used to get hit in the head.
Oh, really?
Real quick.
Really?
When I slumped over, sit up. Yeah. Definitely.
You too,
Kenny? My house.
No, I was laughing at it.
I used to get in trouble.
I remember seeing a girl.
For slouching.
It was a girl in my school, and she used to wear a brace. And I'm like, why are you wearing a, it was a weird brace. It was like around the waist and up to her boobies. And she was like, I have scoliosis. I'm like, what is scoliosis? And that's how I first learned even about why you should sit up straight. It was never a parental teaching.
Will you use the same theory on white women that you do kids? Will you just go right up to a random white woman and go, why don't you stand up straight?
No. could never. I would say something outrageous, but I wouldn't say that.
Would you go to her boyfriend and go, hey, I just want to let you know your white girlfriend isn't standing up straight?
She's slumping over.
Well, no, the boyfriend would come to him and be like, hey, can you do me a favor? Go talk to Jen.
Right.
She's just
slouchy.
Help her out. Go talk to her, Uncle Kenny.
We'll take more questions here if you guys want to call 404-741-Q100. One I got to, I think we'll start with this one, and I think we've received it before. Why do white people let dogs kiss their face?
Oh, nasty. I think that is the nastiest thing in her.
See, I hate
Justin
this.
Does it when he's drunk all the time.
Let's that dog kiss his face.
Oh, and with the tongue. And the tongue thing.
That is a white person's thing, too.
Yes, it is.
The Burt Show.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Here, Burt Show.
Q100, The Burt Show, and Kelly Osborne. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Getting excited about another day of dancing.
Are you really?
I am. I'm really nervous about tonight's show because I'm dancing to one of my dad's songs, and I don't feel like I can do it justice, and I'm a little bit scared.
So the pressure, there's more pressure than for you this week than in past weeks.
Yeah, and especially because my dad is making sure that he's going to be there tonight.
Are your parents, like, proud of you, Kelly? Do you feel like you have, like, a new attitude since doing the show?
I think it's weird that I can't speak for my parents because, you know, I can only go by what they've told me, and I mean, my dad calls me every single day to tell me that he's proud of me and that he can't believe how well that I'm doing. And it's like my mom admitted to me yesterday that she never thought that I would be in the competition this long and how proud she is and how exciting. And because the thing is, if you don't put the work into this show, you can't do it and you will fail miserably. And I think for the first time in my life, I really threw myself into something that terrifies me more than anything in the world. And you know, it's amazing.
Well, Kelly, I think you've done a fantastic job, but now that we have you on the phone, I want to know the schedule because it seems so many people get hurt on this show and have, like in this season, Tom DeLay had to leave. So what is so brutal and why are people getting hurt?
Well, I think, to be totally honest with you, I think it's because people get so involved in the show and want to do so well and start to love it so much that they just do it too hardcore. And, you know, I think a lot, unfortunately, and I mean this with no disrespect, that it was probably a lot to do with Tom's age. I think that, you know, he got two stress fractures, one in each foot, and that's just, that's scary. But, you know, with Louis, he's very aware of how that works on the show. So what he's done with me is he makes me go to Pilates every week. He also makes me go and have a massage once a week, which I'm not complaining about.
Nice.
Kelly Osbourne hanging out with the Bert Show this morning.
Kelly, there's been some rumors that you might be posing for Playboy magazine.
I'm not.
Where do you want to think about that?
You know, they've asked me, this is now the second time, I respectfully decline. I really love Playboy. I love the story behind it. I love, you know, what it has done for pop culture and how it has changed the way that people look at women. And to me, at the same time, though, I just don't ever want my father to open up a magazine with his mates and say, oh, look, here's my daughter with her vagina and her magazine. You know, it's like that. Yeah. There's nothing I could ever want.
So there's really no amount of money at all. I mean, if they said $5 million.
And they paid for my boob job, then maybe.
Do you feel like you have a different confidence to you? Like, is your body changing now doing the show?
Yeah, it's amazing. That has to be one of my favorite parts of the entire show, is to wake up every single day and look in the mirror and see something getting smaller or musclier, and you're just like, oh, it's really exciting because you've worked so hard for it. Like, I sweat my butt off every single day, and I'm exhausted, but it's paying off, and I'm loving it.
Was there a point when you started the show where you just sort of wanted to get to a certain place, and then you'd be fine if you didn't go the whole way, but now you kind of feel like the goal is to win it?
Well, when I first started, it was just not to be the first voted off. And then it was, I just want to stay into the halfway mark. I never expected, I can't tell you, like, how shocking it is for me that I'm still on the show. I never thought I would stay this long at all.
I want to ask you about your dance partner, Louis, because you guys sort of have this little flirty thing going on. But your boyfriend's sitting out in the audience watching you dance. Does he ever get jealous?
Louis's gay.
Louis's your boyfriend gay. Or your dance partner?
My dance partner. It's like Louis and I are best friends. We've become so close, and I think, you know, Luke has even become really close with him. We do activities every single week, or we go to a movie, and, you know, he's a part of my life now, and I feel like he will be forever.
Do you sort of have a better understanding about how some of these partners that are on the show that aren't gay, when they start dancing with each other, start to form, like, sexual relationships with each other?
It would be weird, I think. I don't know. I think that would kind of freak me out. I hope none of that's going on.
Probably even weirder for a gay guy.
Yeah. Kelly, I'm just curious, because you've gone through so much in your life, and you've talked openly about having drug addiction in the past and getting through that, and you're at such a great place in your life. Is there somebody right now that you would say definitely needs an intervention, somebody else in the public eye?
There's a million people in the public eye that need an intervention. I mean, just open up your weekly tabloids, but it's not for me to say. I could say about anyone, you know, about a million people right now. But people won't get help unless they want to get help, unless they're ready to get help. And there's no point of everyone, you know. The one thing that I would suggest, if anybody out there is dealing with somebody that's an addict or, you know, doesn't know what to do, you have to, tough love's where it counts. You can't enable people, but at the same time, you can't force someone to do something. So just letting them know that you're there when they do want to do something is also really important.
As somebody that's recovering, can you see that they're in trouble before they see it?
Oh, hell yeah. And I'm going through that with quite a few of my friends right now, where I start to look at them and I'm like, you have to tell yourself, don't be judgmental. Just because you're the way you are, everyone else isn't like that. And it's not necessarily that. It's just like I look at my friends and I see, wow, you just spent like $400 on alcohol and you're still drinking and you're slurring and you're puking and you're still trying to drink more. What are you doing? And It's one of those things where, you know, again, you can't say anything because you will look like the mean one, like trying to stop your friends from having fun. But it takes a strong person to say something. And I always, you know, like, well, that's a bit weird, but if you ever want to talk about it, let me know. Like, you can't force your beliefs on people, but you can let them know that you're there.
You don't think that you would have more credibility with a celebrity that you see is going through it already by getting a call from you from somebody that has gone through the exact same situation?
Yeah, but you know what, though? It's not just about celebrities. There's more people out there that, you know, for me, I'd rather go to the people who don't have the access to the help, because trust me, they all have the access, and they all have people telling them what to do, but they're doing it to themselves, and they've been offered help a million times. So for me, it means more to go out to the people who can't get it as quickly.
Did you have to change your friends at all when you got sober?
Not change my friends, just, you know, because, you know, I'm really lucky. I never really had friends that forced me to do anything or introduce me to things. I did everything because I wanted to, and most of the time I did alone. But at the same time, my first, you know, port of call isn't to go to a nightclub and sit there all night while my friends get wasted. It's like, I don't go to the same places I used to go, but I still see my friends.
Well, Kelly, on a lighter note, good luck with the show.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think everybody's pulling for you at
this
point.
Absolutely. Definitely one of the fan favorites.
How neat that you're dancing to your dad's song.
Yeah.
I think it's real neat.
It makes me so scared. It's so much to live up to. I hope I can do it justice.
You'll do
great. And how about your mom? How's she been handling it?
Oh, my mom is like my number one cheerleader.
And Jack, has he been giving you a hard time because he has to?
No, I haven't really spoken to him. He's been very busy with his show in England, Adrenaline Junkie, which is his extreme sports show, and that just came out over there. So he's been over in England and he just got back, so I haven't really seen him.
Yeah, I saw like a clip of that show. It must have been on YouTube like a couple of weeks or a couple of months ago. If he was in front of me, I would not have realized it was the same person.
No, isn't it insane how amazing he looks?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I mean, you know, I like to think of myself as a realist. And growing up, Jack, he wasn't the most attractive, but he has turned into the most handsome gentleman ever. So it's like, for me, it's really cool to see that, you know, my little brother is now not my little brother. He's a man. It's kind of scary.
Yeah, it's like everybody's evolving, man.
Yeah.
Well, good luck, and we'll be watching and hope you win this whole thing.
Thank you so much.
All right, Kelly, take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
The Burt Show.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.